And you are back on Veterans Radio, and probably 2 seconds ago you didn't know what that song was. Well, that was the theme of the United States Coast Guard. And joining us on Veterans Radio today are our two guests, Scott Price, the Assistant Historian of the United States Coast Guard. Scott, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you. And also joining us on the line is Chief Petty Officer Robert Lanier, who is a public relations person out of the Cleveland area. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Good morning. How are you doing? Hi, Scott. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Doing well.
Coast Guard's very small. Everybody knows everybody. Right? Well, what we wanted to do during this segment of the program, gentlemen, is to talk a little bit about the history of the Coast Guard. And so I think I'll go to Scott first to tell us, where did the Coast Guard begin and how did it get going?
Well, Alexander Hamilton decided in 1790 that we needed to have some kind of way of collecting tariffs. That was the only way the government was getting financed at that time. And he decided to create a fleet of 10 cutters based out of eastern ports to ensure tariffs. So that was basically our origins. So we have 1790 on, and we've grown since then. And the modern Coast Guard as we know it today was formed in 1915. When the Revenue Cutter Service, which is that service that Alexander Hamilton founded in 1790, merged with the U.S. Life Saving Service and combined to call us, from that point on, the United States Coast Guard. So we trace our history all the way back to 1790, which makes us one of the oldest government organizations.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought. And what was the mission of the Coast Guard from 1915 on?
Well, we combined with the Life Saving Service, so search and rescue became pretty much the centerpiece. We've always been a law enforcement agency as well. So as our current Commandant Admiral Allen always points out, we're a multi-mission service, which is a great benefit to the nation in so many different ways because we do so much. From that point on was law enforcement, search and rescue, and our defense duties as well. So we've served in every conflict of the nation since 1790. And in fact, at the early part, before there was the United States Navy, we were the only armed force afloat.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. See, you learn stuff here on Veterans Radio. That's always
The Navy doesn't remember that part too well.
Yeah, I'm sure that they probably
that
don't.
After the Revolutionary War, Congress disbanded the Navy. So until I think it was 1794 when they authorized it again. So for a few years there, we were the only guys out there on the water with guns.
Oh, okay. I'm sure we'll get some calls on that one, which is just fun.
Well, that's what's fun about history. You got to stir it up a little bit.
Well, why not? Why not? It's, you know, we're around. We can do whatever we want with it. Chief, you're dealing with public relations for the Coast Guard, and you've been in the Coast Guard now for 15 years. Is that correct?
Yes, I have. I've been in 15 years. Came in 1993.
And you've got an interesting biography. You've been pretty much on all over the coast of America and around the world, haven't you?
I've been around. I've been. I started my career in public affairs in New York, dealing with TWA Flight 800, Egypt Air, and the JFK plane crash. And was in Seattle, and then San Diego, and now in Cleveland.
And you were also involved. Tell me what a public relation person does for the Coast Guard.
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag, and we wear several hats, sort of like the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard's one agency, but we're multi-missioned. Same with public affairs. We are we're one specialty, but we are involved in photography, writing, public affairs, media relations, community relations, kind of like the management, but also the guys that make it happen. So if there's a story that you hear about the Coast Guard, there's most likely a public affairs specialist behind it.
Okay. I'm not going to go too much into the World War II thing yet because I want to talk to some other people later on in the program.
Okay.
But I'm going to back to Scott there. Could you just kind of lead us up to World War II and how the Coast Guard got so involved?
Sure. Kind of one of my areas of research that I've conducted, and we've got an active oral history program too. Well, of course, in the 20s and 30s, we had Prohibition, which is basically when we came on the national map. We were a very small service, right around, I think, 10,000 during that time, but we were getting a lot of press at that time. So that was, you know, the first time we really got a lot of public visibility. But during that time, we'd also served in the Navy in World War I. Mm-hmm. Our guys have practiced trained for, you know, all kinds of naval missions. And in the 30s, it became more intense. And as it became more obvious that the world was at war, that we were probably going to be transferred to the Navy, we worked very closely with the Navy in the interwar period in determining what exactly we were going to do during, if we did join the Navy, which we ended up transferring to the Navy in November of 1941. So all of our cutters were prepared to have extra armament added to them. including depth charges, sonar equipment, and that happened in the late 30s, early 40s, before we actually entered the war. Our cutters were already ready to go into convoy duty. Our life-saving stations, we had over 100 of them around the country. All these guys were trained in how to launch surf boats in shallow water and land those boats safely on. So the Marine Corps, of course, took interest in that. So a lot of our sailors trained the Higgin boat operators for landing craft. So, you know, we had expertise in a number of different specialized areas that the Navy and the Marine Corps looked to us for assistance. So that's basically how we started to prep for World War II.
Okay, and I want to go back a little bit when you started talking about the rum runners and so forth during Prohibition, I guess, a thing. And can you relate any stories that you know of how the Coast Guard, because I know that they're out of the Detroit area, you know, with the Detroit River running back and forth, and a lot of things were coming in from Canada. But I also know that there were many of them out on the coast of the Atlantic and the Pacific.
Right. I mean, you remember there was a three-mile limit for your territorial seas, so you could have a ship outside the three-mile limit and load it up with as much booze as could happen. They called those the motherships. And small speedboats would take off, go out to the mothership, load up in international waters, and then speed home. And so that's what we had to deal with. And they were also using code, radio codes. And so we actually had a radio code-breaking unit start up in the 20s, late 20s, early 30s, and to break these rum runner codes. We also had a patrol boat fleet built. Most of our cutters are not known for being the most speedy vessels. They really need endurance. And it was the same during that time, too. So that's why these speedboats were such a problem for us. But we developed a patrol boat fleet of speedy small craft, and we still have those today. So you can see that the legacy of what happened in Prohibition, where the expansion of our duties, the way that we were brought up to the public at that time, you know, in the news more and more, still stays with us today.
Well, I can see that. I just got a note from Bob that the Purple Gang in the Detroit area was relatively well known for running rum and stuff across the Detroit River. And I can only imagine you guys with these little speedboats going back and forth trying to catch other little speedboats.
Yeah, and a lot of times we'd have to end up, our patrol boats still weren't fast enough. So these guys were using, you know, aircraft engines in patrol boats, put two or three of those together, and you could do up to 40 knots or so. And no one could catch you. So we'd end up confiscating these boats and then, you know, turning them into our, commissioning them into the Coast Guard fleet.
Oh, okay.
We don't do that anymore, I don't think.
Well, no, but you do a lot of drug interdiction, don't you?
No, the similarity there is amazing with the motherships and these go, what they call go fast now, especially down in the Caribbean region. But we've armed our helicopters now in response, which actually we'd done the same thing during Prohibition where we armed our aircraft.
Wow. Well, Chief, I'm going to ask you about that. How does the Coast Guard? What's your public relations job with that? I mean, you've got Lake Erie there. I don't know what comes across Lake Erie anymore, but you never know.
Well, we have the Great Lakes, and the one thing that's unique about the Great Lakes here is four of the five of them actually border Canada. So we not only have a Coast Guard mission that we establish, but we also have a mission where we have to provide homeland security on the U.S.-Canada border that goes through the Great Lakes.
You were also involved right after the 9/11 incident that the Coast Guard became more involved in guarding our coast, obviously. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. On September 11th, it was a tremendous change for the Coast Guard. The fact that all of a sudden people kind of recognized who we were and what we did. What's incredible about it is we've been doing that for years. As Scott mentioned, we've been doing that for more than 200 years. The law enforcement, the Homeland Security, the patrolling. Before there was a Homeland Security Department, we were providing that security for the homeland throughout the United States and in foreign countries as well. So it's a role in September 11th that came forward and people actually recognized it. But it's something we've been doing for more than 200 years.
How were you involved in that at all as far as getting out? I know, again, reading your bio that you had been involved in what was going on after 9/11 on the East Coast.
Yes, I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised in New York City, and I was actually stationed in Seattle when September 11th happened, actually coming off the bus because of the three-hour difference. I was just arriving at work, and a gentleman had mentioned to me that a plane hit the Twin Towers. Now, I remember when a Cessna hit the Empire State Building, so I had, at the time, thought it was a Cessna, and then I watched on TV when the second plane hit. That day, I was ready to go to New York, but unfortunately they had stopped all the planes and there was no way to get back to the East Coast. Eventually, after all the flights came through, because of my knowledge of New York City and because I was previously stationed there and still had some media contacts, I was requested to fly out there and assist with getting media on board some of the Coast Guard boats and telling the Coast Guard story during our response for September 11th.
Well, the Coast Guard is now under the umbrella of Homeland Security, isn't it?
Yes, we are. And as you guys are having an anniversary, we too are having an anniversary. This March, the Department of Homeland Security is celebrating the fifth anniversary of all the agencies coming together and forming this one department. But yes, we fall under the Department of Homeland Security. Previously, we were under the Department of Transportation. And as Scott could vouch, we actually started under the Department of Treasury in the collecting taxes and tariff in that sense, but then went to Transportation and now part of DHS.
Well, could one of you tell me, you know, I can see how the mission has changed from collecting tariffs to going to war to coming back, and now you're still doing a lot of your work is the search and rescue, isn't it?
Yeah, our bread and butter is search and rescue, but we're a multi-mission agency, and our admiral, Admiral Pat Allen, always stresses that when he gives speeches and when he talks. Recently gave the State of the Coast Guard address at the National Press Club on February 14th. And again, stated that while search and rescue is what we're known for, we are an environmental agency, we're a law enforcement agency, we do rescue and assist, we work with several other agencies to assist them in getting their missions completed. So while people look at the Coast Guard, our name says Coast Guard, but there's so much more to what we do.
What about going forward? What are the opportunities we have? Young listeners out there, what are the opportunities in the Coast Guard for both men and women?
Several opportunities for men and women. The Coast Guard, again, is an old agency, but right now we've got a lot of new things that are coming online. We've got our national security cutter, the Bertoff, that's going through its ocean trials right now. It's one of the newest high-endurance cutters that we have, absolutely dynamic and state-of-the-art. We have our HH-65, the Dolphin helicopters, which are the orange ones that you see. They've been they have new engines. They've all been refitted, and they're tremendous more power now. The pilots love them. They are advancing our search and rescue mission as well as any other mission that we have. And we also have a new medium-range surveillance aircraft, the HC-144A, the Ocean Sentry, and that's going to assist not only our search and rescue efforts, but agency assists, and when we have to assist other countries, for example, when we assisted with the tsunami efforts, those new aircrafts are coming online. And these are new aircrafts that are part of our new acquisition program that's really providing new boats to the cutters and really replacing our aging fleet that's been going on for years.
Has the Coast Guard been involved in the Iraqi Freedom?
Yes, we have. We actually have, I don't know the exact number.
There's
but
six patrol boats over there now.
Yeah, we've had several people over there, not only assisting with patrolling the waters, but escorting the merchant vessels that go by, doing boardings, making sure no contraband is coming in. We're also we also have buoy tenders over there to make sure that the buoys are on station so that any of the patrol crafts or logistic crafts that are supporting our men and women over there in Iraqi Operation Iraqi Freedom, so that when those boats come in and bring in supplies for them, that these boats don't run aground or run into any trouble at all.
That sounds like you guys are doing a lot. I think that's amazing what the Coast Guard is doing. And I'm just thinking at this time of year with everything finally melting, we know that those ice fishermen up in the Great Lakes or especially on Lake Sinclair in the Detroit area are going to be picked up again by the Coast Guard. For some reason I got to go out to that shanty the last time before it sinks.
Well, hey, the one thing is, we love our job. If you meet men and women of the Coast Guard, we're very passionate about our job. But the one thing I want to stress is we are your Coast Guard. With people like you and your listeners that support us all the time, we love the job that we do. It's one of the greatest things serving our public every day.
Well, I think it's a great. How big is the Coast Guard? How many members are there?
Let's see. Wow, we used to be. I think we're almost near 40,000. And
Admiral Allen always says we'd fill up half a Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, and as a dire New York fan, I've seen that before. But what's unique
yeah,
is if you look at the size of the Coast Guard, we are around the nation and around the world 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. But still, the one number that we can't beat is we cannot beat the size of the New York City Police Department. We are still smaller than the New York City Police Department, yet we are around the world and multi-missioned.
I was going to say that the responsibilities that you have, you probably is there. We've got about a minute before we go to our break at the bottom of the hour. Is there any, what are the future numbers that they want to do? Are they asking for more?
Well, in the State of the Coast Guard address, Admiral Allen is looking to increase the Coast Guard by approximately 1,500 people per year for the next few years. As our mission grows, we're going to need people to do those missions. We're going to need young men and women. We're going to need them in the active duty component. But we're also going to need them in the reserve component. So if there are people that are interested in the Coast Guard and not really in the full-time component but still want to provide a service to their country, we have reserve billets that are available as well.
Okay, and I understand that there's a lot of information out there. I'm going to ask you, if you two would like to hang on around the corner, I'm going to ask you to stick around because we're going to start looking at World War II and the Coast Guard where they really made their name.
Sure.
We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
On September 27th, 1942, a group of landing craft sped toward the beaches of Guadalcanal. Huddled on shore and fighting for their lives were about 500 men of Colonel Louis B. Chesty Puller's 1st Battalion, 7th Marines. Earlier that day, the same group of landing craft had put the Marines on the beach. Now they were returning to extract them. As the LZVPs and LCMs reached the shore, Coast Guard Signalman First Class Douglas Monroe steered his LCVP between the evacuating Marines and the Japanese. By placing his craft between the men on the beach and the enemy, Monroe allowed the landing craft to safely evacuate all of the Marines, including the wounded. As the last man climbed aboard, Monroe steered his craft away from the beach. When almost clear, Japanese gunfire struck Monroe and killed him instantly. Monroe was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. It seems fitting that given the Coast Guard's life-saving tradition and the tremendous part the Coast Guard played during World War II, the Coast Guard's only Medal of Honor winner was not only involved in a rescue, but also an amphibious operation.